You are listening to Perplexity.
Have you ever driven through a ghost town and wondered about the history behind it? Have you wondered what ruin or tragedy may have led to this town being nothing more than a skeleton? And, not to put on my tinfoil hat here, but have you ever wondered if these ghost towns have something more to them? If they could serve as a wormhole where you could slip into another dimension? And what would you do if you ventured onto an internet forum where you stumbled across hundreds of people claiming they had found a ghost town that took them into another universe? In this episode, we will journey into the lost town of Ongshat, New Jersey. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I am your host, Kadra, and if you are new here, welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, you're in the right place, and be sure to follow along. And if you are a returning listener, welcome back. So happy you're here. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see my hair is still wet from the shower. It's been a day. Just recorded a Patreon episode too. So I have a great story for you guys today. It's very interesting. Basically, I was researching ghost towns. I thought it would be cool to like just tell about the history and lore about a ghost town, maybe find some paranormal stuff about it. And then I stumbled across this story of Ongshat, New Jersey. And let's just say it's not what I thought it was going to be, but I love it. So we will get into that in just a minute. I do want to issue just a quick trigger warning for today's episode, as this podcast is not for children, and I do enjoy my fair share of cursing, so listener discretion is advised. And as always, all of the sources that were used for today's episode will be down in the show notes. So if one takes the turnpike to exit 4 and follows Route 70 east, they will come to Route 72 at 4-mile circle. Taking a hard left will lead the traveler to Ongshat, or a trail that some say leads to a mysterious portal to another dimension. Ongshat, also known as Ong, is a small ghost town in Pemberton Township, New Jersey. They have a very colorful past dating back to the 1700s. The area is heavily wooded, and it's located in the Pine Barrens. The Pine Barrens is a plethora of deserted villages and forest. It's been abandoned for decades. Some even say it's been abandoned for centuries. There's almost no one there. The forest is more than 1 million acres, and it sprawls across the southern part of New Jersey. While it's thick with pines, oaks, wildlife, and carnivorous plants, it's called the Barrens because of the soil. The soil is very acidic and sandy, so these grounds prevented early settlers from cultivating crops there. And if the Pine Barrens sound familiar to you, it may be because you're a fan of the infamous show The Sopranos. In The Sopranos episode, they hide a lot of their bodies here because it's such a thick and deserted area. A lot of people also say once you go in, you'll never come out. You also may know the Pine Barrens because of the infamous cryptid, the Jersey Devil. They say that this was the birthing place of the Jersey Devil. So there's obviously so much that we could get into here. And like many topics that I've covered on this podcast, there's quite a bit of history. And with history comes lore. So just know that everything I'm about to tell you about Ongshat, New Jersey, it's kind of like the game of telephone. There are a lot of different variations and legends to all of this. So if you're familiar with this legend and it doesn't sound exactly like the one that you've heard, that's why. This is just from the sources that I found, and then I tried to compile all of it into a cohesive story. So some say that the town of Ong's Hat may have once been named Ong's Hut, referring to an overnight shelter or tavern that was built by a local man named Ong, or Jacob Ong. Some people say he was a tavern keeper. But one of the most popular legends talks about how the town got the name Ong's Hat. The legend says Ong was a popular local known to woo women, so he was a bit of a ladies' man, a bit of a player, and he would dance with them at the town's one and only dance hall. Ong was well-dressed, and he was known for his silk top hat. So one day, according to this legend, Mr. Ong is dancing, and he's, you know, getting all the ladies, he's flirting left and right, when a jealous lover stormed in, and I guess saw him flirting with these other women. So, in a fit of rage, she ripped the silk hat off of his head, threw it on the ground, and stomped on it, ruining the hat. And Mr. Ong was a bit inebriated, and he wasn't used to not getting what he wanted. So this pissed him off, and he basically picked up the hat, stormed outside, and in a fit of rage, he threw the hat into the air, and it landed on the tallest tree branch of a tree out there, and that basically became a landmark for finding this tiny town. People say that this hat stayed up in this tree for years, and the name of this area also predates the Revolutionary War, appearing on a map in 1778 of Hessian encampments in New Jersey. According to Henry Charlton Beck, author of Forgotten Towns of Southern New Jersey, Ong's Hat was indeed a real place. It was once a social center and lively town known for having accessible alcohol during the bootlegging period. In fact, one of the first arrests of a bootlegger is said to have occurred at Ong's Hat. But by the time it was the early 20th century, only 7 residents remained in the town. A Polish couple, the Chininiskis, lived here among the 5 other locals, but interestingly enough, the Chininiskis disappeared. Years later, hunters would come across a female skeleton at Ong's Hat, which police speculated must have been the body of Mrs. Chininisky. Mr. Chininisky was tracked down in New York, but police couldn't tie him to his wife's disappearance and death. The case remains unsolved today. The death of Mrs. Chininisky is a symbol of what happened to this town. The once lively and thriving place of Ong's Hat was now nothing more than a skeleton. By the time it was 1936, the town was completely abandoned. Though Ong's Hat continued to appear on some maps all the way up to the year 2006, it seemed that the small town of Ong's Hat was no more, dead and gone. But in the 1980s, Ong's Hat would become the backdrop for a series of allegedly fictional conspiracy theory-themed stories. The stories would originate in Joseph Matheny's book, The Incunabula Papers, Ong's Hat and Other Gateways to New Dimensions. Now, I want to preface this by saying this is where the story gets very muddy and confusing. We're gonna get into the writings of this guy, Joseph Matheny. Also, that's not to be confused with Joseph Matheny, who is a convicted rapist and serial killer. You've probably seen pictures of him on the internet before. He is disgusting and awful, and that's for a whole other episode. So people who have read Matheny's book have pretty split opinions on it. Some people say that it's nothing more than a work of fiction, while others allege that it hints at a government cover-up. Matheny himself has said, quote, The split between who believes the book is fiction versus nonfiction is pretty even, end quote. He's also never clarified whether he intended the work to be fact or fiction. So let's get into the plot of the book and Matheny's history. So in this book, Matheny tells the story of a group of white jazz musicians and poets who founded the Moorish Orthodox Church of America in the 1950s. This group would travel the world, meet a lot of spiritual leaders and figureheads, and if you think about the time period leading up to this, this would have been, you know, leading up to the New Age movement. One of the founding members of the Moorish Church of America was a man named Wally Fard. Fard would later, using all of his life savings, purchase around 200 acres in the New Jersey Pine Barrens in 1978. At this point, Fard had collected a group of followers, including a group of runaways from Paramus, which is a town in New Jersey, along with two lesbian anarchists. So this unlikely group started calling themselves the Moorish Science Ashram, which is pretty strange because it's like a group of white people and they're saying that they have this ashram, but it's also a science ashram, and an ashram is like a holy place. So it's just very unorthodox. Fard felt that this group had a message that they needed to get out into the world. And he would later publish a series of newsletters called The Visionary Recitals, proclaiming his beliefs to the masses. Among people who would read and believe these newsletters were two former Princeton scientists who had radicalized and been fired, and this was Frank and Althea Dobbs. In this book, these characters, Frank and Althea, have a colorful past, to say the least. Frank and Althea were raised in Texas in a UFO-worshipping cult founded by their father. But in adulthood, the twins would grow up to become brilliant and unconventional scientists. They worked at Princeton for a while, but their recent dissertation on what they would call cognitive chaos basically resulted in them being laughed out of the room when they made their pitch. And they would end up leaving Princeton. Setting off on their own adventure, Frank and Althea Dobbs would join the Moorish Science Ashram with Wally Fard. Wally Fard would welcome them in, and it wasn't long before Frank and Althea would set up a laboratory in a trailer in Ong's Hat, New Jersey. They continued their research on cognitive chaos, and they called this the Institute of Chaos Studies. The research, without getting too complicated, basically involved tapping into the quote-unquote underused part of the brain, which in and of itself is debatable. But they said that by using this underused part of the brain, you could accomplish unimaginable things, including stopping aging and eradicating human disease. Within 3 years of their research, the twins would stumble upon a bizarre device that they would call the gate. And the gate was one of a series of devices that the scientists would later refer to as the egg. This was a device that was designed to explore cognitive chaos and facilitate travel to alternate dimensions. Multiple reiterations of this technology in the book were tested, but on the fourth attempt, according to Matheny, something crazy would happen. One of their test subjects, who was a runaway from the town of Paramus, was basically hooked up to this computer. His brainwaves were charted, and using their fourth version of this egg, both the test subject and the egg seemed to suddenly vanish into thin air. Where had the man gone? And with their new technology now vanished, would they have to start again? The group didn't know what to make of this. But 7 minutes later, which is the number of completion in the Bible, the egg device would mysteriously rematerialize before their eyes, along with their test subject. The subject would claim that during these 7 minutes, he had traveled into another dimension next door to theirs. He knew that he was still in Aang's hat, but in this new realm, he said that no other humans existed. And this is when the group had realized they had done something extraordinary. They had opened a new gateway into another dimension, which they would call the Gate. Now, interestingly enough, the group would have to leave the Pine Barrens, again, according to this book. And this was because a chemical spill at Fort Dix had happened nearby. It was leaking nuclear material into the area, so it wasn't safe for them to stay. But instead of just relocating to another remote forest in New Jersey, or even going to another state, they fled interdimensionally. I know, crazy. In the book, Matheny claims that this group would use their special technology to travel into this alternate dimension. So they could basically stay in the same area, but it's in another dimension. So they could be undetected and continue to live their lives and work on their experiments. But the US government would somehow get word of these experiments, and they didn't like this at all. So in the book, then there's basically this brutal confrontation between this group of scientists and the government. They raid the compound, and this would result in the deaths of 7 members. Again, the symbol of number 7. And the members were basically coming and going between this dimension and the new one that they discovered in the gate to kind of like go back and forth and get whatever supplies they needed. And that is essentially the plot of the book, which is super fascinating. But here's where it gets even more interesting. So Matheny claims that the whole reason he wrote this book in the first place is because he came across a catalog called the Incunabula Catalog. This catalog listed tons of books. There were like over 20 of them. And in this catalog, it broke down the contents of each book. And all of these books were about these types of concepts in Matheny's book: parallel universes, quantum reality. And Matheny would later interview a man named Nick Herbert. Nick had written several works that were included in this catalog, and he was a brilliant physicist. And then later, the Incunabula catalog, along with these mysterious pamphlets about the Aang's hat mystery, strangely started to appear in people's mailboxes. Joseph Matheny had released this paper that he called Aang's Hat, and he printed it in this brochure. It was kind of a teaser for his new book. But the way that it's written, it teases the concept of this being true. He alleges that there could likely be a gateway to another dimension in this lost town. And historically, when these pamphlets started getting circulated, this was around the time of Project Stargate and the Gateway Process, along with the New Age movement. So topics I have talked about on this podcast before. And this was also the beginning of the Internet Age. So this was all a perfect storm, the perfect time for something like this to happen. People were really curious about this kind of stuff, and so of course they were curious about what Matheny had to say. There were also now all these whispers about the concept of an alternate universe going on all these different internet forums. So basically, you know, people were getting all of these pamphlets in their mailboxes about this, and then all these stories started popping up on the internet about Aang's hat and this parallel universe there. This story would get bigger and bigger and bigger, and this would become one of the earliest internet conspiracy theories. And like every conspiracy theory, there were a small group, but significant, that would get really into it. They called themselves eggheads, like the egg device in the book. It also didn't take long before other versions of the Aang's hat story started popping up on the internet. These people were claiming they had traveled to Aang's hat and stumbled into another universe. They called themselves survivors. There were also people who had claimed to have grown up in the ashram and experienced the violent raid and were tasked with destroying the gate and the egg technology. Matheny even posted interviews with alleged survivors and had set up email addresses where you could contact different people who had been to Aang's hat. So people are getting more and more curious about if all of this could be true. They're like, okay, what is this? Is this real? What's the deal with Aang's hat? And the pamphlet that everyone had gotten in their mailboxes, and it also started to circulate online, had also concluded with an invitation to find this lost town of Aang's hat, New Jersey. But it did warn, quote, "You might discover that finding it is not so simple," end quote. And I mean, people love a challenge, right? And there's also those internet sleuths. This was kind of one of the earliest examples of an internet sleuth. People were very curious and had nothing but time. So people are like, okay, we know it's in the Pine Barrens. We're going to use all these clues and we're going to find this town. People started traveling to the Pine Barrens and it became like this intense scavenger hunt. People online also started claiming that even just reading about Aang's hat was affecting them. People were having strange and vivid dreams, experiencing visual hallucinations, pretty disturbing stuff. With internet sleuths being sleuthers, they were also able to track down Matheny. They found his personal information, his address, and they started camping out in front of his home, demanding answers. The story was just getting bigger and bigger. It had taken on a life of its own, and Matheny couldn't take it anymore. He was being harassed, and so finally, in 2001, Matheny would confess. He claimed that the Aang's hat conspiracy was all in good fun. He had intended it to be nothing more than a joke and a mind-expanding experiment. And it was also, of course, a good way to promote his book. None of what Matheny had alleged was actually true. After his sign-off, most of the egghead community, though mildly disappointed, wished Matheny well. A few others, though, were pissed, and they refused to believe Matheny. They thought that someone must have gotten to him, wanting to keep him quiet. Today, there are still some people who, like many other conspiracy theorists, believe that there is more to the lost town of Aang's hat than meets the eye. Hikers who visit the Pine Barrens may search for the town, or, of course, the Jersey Devil. They may seek out allegedly haunted paths that begin at Aang's hat's trailhead. Numerous urban legends have also emerged from these dense and vast woods. Jed Olbaum, a writer who visited this area, wrote an article for Gizmodo.com, and I have a quote that I want to read. So Olbaum says, quote, "Combing the nearby forests for hours yielded no sign of an ashram and no swirling gateways or mysterious portals to whisk us away to captivating new realms. Still, After just a little bit of time in the pines, it became easier to believe something terrifying or unreal is just around the corner. Nightfall was thick and eerie, almost tangible. And local folklore has always produced tales of horror and macabre, most notably the centuries-old legend of the deadly-winged Jersey Devil. And then he quotes someone in his quote, so, "You see some pretty weird stuff here at night," said a young woman with a small piercing above her upper lip, tending the bar at Magnolia, on the edge of what was once Ong's Hat. Rob, a Magnolia regular in a camo hat, said he doesn't really believe in any of the local ghost stories, but if you go into those woods, you don't want to get lost, because you might never get found. The harder you look for Ong's Hat, the further it shrinks from view. This is a real-life ghost town that maybe never was, living on through maps and local lore for no particular reason at all. After puzzling out all the details and tracking down the facts, I still found myself in the middle of nowhere, staring into a void, unsure of how real the parts were, wandering through the chilly forest at night. End quote. I also came across a similar opinion piece in a Slate.com article written by Benjamin Frisch and Willa Paskin. Quote, "Maybe you're confused now, but allow yourself to sit in that confusion for a bit longer. Because that sensation, when you're not quite sure when fact has ended and fiction has begun, that is the essence of the Ong's Hat legend. And the Ong's Hat legend is real, in the sense that it's a real story that was relayed in a series of documents that first started appearing in 1989. Hitting the peak of its popularity on the internet between 1999 and 2001. It's a real story in the sense that those documents have now been downloaded 2 million times. It's a real story in the sense that it is still inspiring real people to go to the Pine Barrens looking for Ong's Hat. It's a real story in the sense that it's captivated thousands of people who encountered it on the early internet and who didn't quite know what it was. A spiritual quest, a game, a cult, the truth. All they knew is that they wanted to find out." End quote. And I love that quote. I think it's such a great way to summarize this whole legend, because when I was researching it, I was so confused. I feel like part of me bought into it as I was reading about it, because some of the sources you come across, it's still like those early stories of the conspiracy on the internet that like present it to be true. And I was like, oh my gosh, could this be possible? And like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it really got me thinking. And then, like, at the end, I found out that this was a scam. Or was it? You know? There's some people who still think that this could be real or partially real, partially true. So, to wrap things up, perhaps this is one of those stories where what makes it real is the fact that so many people believe it. And Ong's Hat, the Pine Barrens, I mean, come on, it's the perfect backdrop for a story like this. There are numerous ghost stories and legends that have come out of the Pine Barrens. Like I said, this was the birthplace of the Jersey Devil, and like I said with The Sopranos, this is like one of the most famous episodes of that show, all those murders and hiding the bodies that happened here. Or perhaps there is a shred of truth to this story. Maybe. Just to put my tinfoil hat on for a second, Matheny was actually maybe onto something. And maybe he took it all back because he feared what would happen if he continued to expose the truth. But whatever the case, you can't deny that the story of the lost town of Ong's Hat, New Jersey, is certainly perplexing. And that, everybody, is the story of Ong's Hat, Joseph Matheny's writings, and one of the earliest internet-based conspiracy theories. So what do you guys think about this? I found this story so interesting. It has so many elements to it. And now I kind of want to read the book. If you guys are familiar with this story, or you've read the book, if you've been to Ong's Hat, let me know. I would love to hear your thoughts down in the comments below. If you are listening on a podcast platform, I know on Spotify too, you can leave a comment. Let me know what you thought of this episode, or you can always send me a DM on Instagram. I love to hear from you guys. And if you want to support the show, you can always join the Patreon, the Perplexed Society. I have some great exclusive bonus content on there. My friend Cassidy Liston from Drinking the Kool-Aid, we have some side stories on there. I'm also covering the Daughters of the Cult documentary right now, and there's 3 episodes out currently that you can listen to. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel so that you can get new notifications and mysteries every week. Keep up with me. And of course, you can always leave reviews. I am doing a giveaway right now. If you want to win some free merch or have a chance to win some free merch, if you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, that gives you 4 entries into the giveaway. If you leave a 5-star review on Spotify, that also gives you 4 entries. You just need to screenshot those and send them to me on my Instagram, which is Perplexity Mystery Podcast. And I have pinned the post on my Instagram with all the instructions so that you can see like all the other ways to get entries and stuff. I'll announce the winner on March 31st. It'll be randomly selected, and whoever wins, you get a merch item of your choice. It could be a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a long sleeve, a tank top, one of my mugs. It can be one of my 2023 designs if you prefer that one, and I will ship it to you free of charge. So I would really, really appreciate it if you enjoyed to leave a 5-star review. Each time you do that, it boosts me up the charts. I have a review here from GingerHost26. She says, "So absolutely amazing. Kadra is phenomenal. Her voice is fantastic and always keeps me entertained. I've worked with her on my podcast, and not only is her show a must listen, she is an amazing person as well. If I could give her 10 stars, I would." So that's my friend Natasha over at Cryptids, Creeps, and Conspiracies, but thank you for leaving that review, and I would love it so much if you guys did the same. I think that about wraps it up, and thank you guys so much for listening. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week and stay safe, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast, hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brennan. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leaving a 5-star review. It helps the show more than you know. Contact, support, and merch links can be found in the episode description. And if you have a story to share or a topic request, send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. Kadra would love to read your story on the podcast. Until next week, stay curious.